In the name of our all-loving God, creator, redeemer, and sustainer. Today is the first day of Holy Week, the most important days in the church year, marking the last week of Jesus' life. The church's observance of Holy Week, with all its various liturgies, is intended to be an experiential and incarnational experience for us all. We are being asked to invest our time and our very selves in these liturgies by physically participating in the services as we are able, by having our feet washed on Thursday or washing another's, by keeping watch with the sacrament, by walking the stations of the cross, by kneeling, bowing, keeping silence. This is our work this week, our liturgy. I invite you to participate as much as you are able. We begin Holy Week with Palm Sunday, marking Jesus' triumphal entry into Jerusalem. Many churches include the reading of the Passion today. Here at St. Paul's, we focus on Palm Sunday itself. I want to put the story in context. Not only the biblical story of Jesus' life, but the importance of this event to the early Christians. The story of the palm procession in Jerusalem that we just heard is one of the few stories of Jesus that can be found in all four Gospels. That fact alone should draw our attention to its importance. And if you caught it, in today's reading, there was no mention of palms. Jerusalem, at Passover time, was teeming with people. People who lived there, thousands upon thousands of pilgrims who came there to celebrate the annual festival of deliverance from bondage. Passover was meant to invoke and memorialize the divine act of liberation of the Hebrews from Egyptian oppression. And the Romans, the overlords of Israel-Palestine, were worried about insurrection at this season. This is why Pontius Pilate left the comfort of his palace on the Mediterranean coast and came to Jerusalem with all his legions, just to make the Jews know who was in charge. Jesus' entry into Jerusalem is a prophetic action. It is planned. It is an overt political statement. He has been heading toward Jerusalem for the past 10 chapters in Luke's gospel when he set his face to go to Jerusalem. Jesus knows his own tradition. He knows what happens to prophets, that prophets die in Jerusalem. He knows that what he is doing is dangerous, and so there's an element of secrecy to his actions. He tells his disciples, almost on the QT, to go into the village and untie a colt and bring it. If there's any question, just say the secret password. The Lord needs it, and everything will be okay. And it is. So Jesus gets on the colt, and people spread their cloaks and start cheering him. Riding a colt was a symbol of peace and humility. The words Luke uses to describe the crowd's affirmation echo his Christmas story and the song of the angels when Jesus was born. Peace on earth, remember, the angels sang. Now, as Jesus rides his colt toward Jerusalem, the people look to the sky and sing, peace in heaven. Heaven sings of peace on earth, and earth echoes back, peace in heaven. Throughout his gospel, Luke presents Jesus as one who embodies peace. And then the people cry, "Blessed is the King." That reiterates their hopes and their dreams. Their hope is genuine. The crowds are sincere in their praise of Jesus. And among the people waving their palms and spreading their cloaks and shouting their joy are probably those Jesus healed, those he has fed, those who have received his words as good news, as Luke says, for all the deeds of power they had seen. Those who for so many years had felt themselves locked out of the community, marginalized and excluded, are now restored to society. They are truly grateful. And at the same time, they dream and they anticipate that the oppressive Roman rule will finally be overthrown. There's a glitch, however, when they speak these words of "Blessed is the King," because to proclaim Jesus as King is to say that Caesar is no longer. It borders on treason. Even if Jesus is heralded as King, he is no normal king. He is certainly not Caesar. The way in which Caesar conducted business was through force and fear and bloodshed. He was the human epitome of power. In fact, he was even revered as a god. Jesus' kingdom is one of peace and forgiveness and selflessness, antithetical to the kingdom of Caesar. When Jesus rode into Jerusalem on Palm Sunday, he was revealing that the reign or kingdom of God stands in stark contrast to the reign of Rome and every other political system that seeks triumphant victory by influencing people through violence and coercion. The gospel of Jesus subverts the politics of violence because the gospel is the politics of humility and service and forgiveness and a nonviolent love that embraces all people of every nation and religion and ethnicity, and especially those we call our enemies. The world of Jerusalem 2,000 years ago and our world today are not all that different. So many of the same issues dominate: violence, racism, oppression, fear of the other, poverty, suffering. And we mostly tend to live by the politics of Rome rather than the politics of Jesus. Whenever we use power over others, whenever we use force or coercion as our most trusted tool, whenever we demean or denigrate others, whenever we demand and or use weapons of war, we are following the politics of Rome. Fortunately, Jesus revealed the alternative. He called it the kingdom of God. It's a political way of life based not on triumphant violence, but rather on humble service. The politics of Jesus makes sure that everyone has daily bread. It seeks to forgive debts and sins. It avoids the temptation to commit evil against our neighbors. It calls us into a life of forgiveness. But we know this is risky. We know that the politics of Jesus led him to Good Friday, where he suffered and died. And yet he stayed true to the kingdom of God, speaking words of forgiveness as he was murdered. "Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing." The kingdom of God is not just a call to a personal ethic. It's a political ethic. Indeed, the politics of Jesus seeks to influence our personal lives, but it also seeks to influence our political lives. Wherever personal or political systems use violence and power and coercion to be triumphant and victorious. Jesus beckons us to follow him into a different kind of politics, into the kingdom of God that lives by love and service and forgiveness. Palm Sunday and Holy Week are unsettling because the story reveals so much about us, reminding us of our transient tendencies or our cut-and-run proclivities. At the same time, Holy Week reminds us of God's amazing mercy and love. And so on this Palm Sunday, the question we face is, what response will we make? Will we be bystanders waving our palms, not risking participation? Or will we engage with Jesus, share in his passion through this Holy Week, and accept his love for us and for all persons everywhere?